The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Italy v Spain, that sounds like a good semi-final. The Italians defeat Belgium in a scintillating game. Pace, movement, guile, Insigne and Barella with wonderful finishes, enough to stop Jeremy Doku and all of his older friends. The aged Italian defence embracing after every clearance, do just a tiny bit more than their aged, standoffish Belgian counterparts. And there's an absolute exhibition in shithousery and time-wasting at the end. We wouldn't want anything else, would we? Meanwhile, Spain stutter to a shootout win over Switzerland, where most people forget how to take a penalty. Quite the issue at that particular juncture. A soft red card and heroic rearguard action isn't enough for Jan Sommer and his mates, but are Spain good? I will ask the panel that question. Also, sweet Caroline, it's England-Ukraine tomorrow. We'll look ahead to that. And Denmark versus the Czech Republic. As always, your questions are there. We thank a man for getting 17 people to vote for us in that awards we're pretending not to care about. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Simon Burnton, welcome.
Hi.
Hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max Rushton.
Hello, Nikki Bandini.
Hi.
Congratulations.
As I said just before we came on Air Max, it was all me. I definitely am the one who needs this.
Absolutely. And as I said before we came on air, saw you going down with cramp. With 2 minutes of injury time, pretending to bump into the door of your kitchen and then falling in a massive heap. Absolutely. Well, look, we'll get to that. But what were your thoughts on the game, Nikki?
I mean, I loved it, obviously. Obviously, I loved the result, but I thought it was a brilliant game. It was such a contrast, I think, because we'd all just sat and watched that Switzerland-Spain game, which was a fascinating game. It was certainly a tense game, the Switzerland-Spain game, but it was a very cagey game. And Italy, to my great joy, after Baz definitely, when we spoke after the Austria game, started to try to prod the "look, Italy can be defensive, they are going to be defensive, aren't they" line. Italy weren't. They were everything that I thought they were going to be at this tournament again, that they were in the group stage. They were the team that went 1-0 up and was still pressing for a second goal and perhaps got a bit too comfortable going forward and did give up a goal back and did give up some great chances and did need some flipping brilliant saves, frankly, from Donnarumma at certain points of the game. But I just think there's so much joy in this team right now. There's so much enthusiasm and positive feeling. And I think, frankly, Belgium came at it with the same mindset. Belgium were also trying to attack. Belgium also had De Bruyne doing beautiful, brilliant things. You had Lukaku turning, I think it was Chiellini, in the first minute and getting in behind him. It was such an open and an exciting game.
Producer Joel wrote, even Martin Keown sounds like he's enjoying this game. It was frantic, Simon, wasn't it?
It was a fun game. It was fun. It would have been more fun. I'll tell you what, it would have been more fun.
Okay.
If Italians would stay on their bloody feet a bit more often.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry, but the big contrast in styles was between the team that liked cheating and the team that didn't like cheating. And, you know, Italy have a lot of quality. They scored a really good goal. But pretty much from minute one, several of their players, particularly Verratti, Jorginho, and the number one, Immobile, were diving to win free kicks, diving later on to waste time, diving to win yellow cards. When Insigne picked up the ball, turned to run at goal for that beautiful finish, there was a player on him, a player who could have made a challenge on him, but in Tielemans, but who couldn't because he was on a yellow card. He was on a yellow card because of some play acting from Verratti early on in the game. He subsequently had a warning because of some further play acting from Verratti. And Italy showed plenty enough quality to have won this game. But I didn't, you know, by the end, my 12-year-old son was spitting feathers next to me. And it took away the pleasure for me. Took away the pleasure from seeing the pace of the game was fantastic. You know, it was one end to the other for a lot of it. It was a thrilling game, but one of the sides, I just couldn't enjoy them.
Barry, do you want to get involved, or do you just...
I'm happy to defer to Nikki, who looked so disappointed as Simon went on that mini rant and shook her head, just in, you know, how dare you? How could you say this about my beloved?
That's not why Italy? I was shaking my head. That's not why I was shaking my head. Simon is entitled to criticise Italy for his perception of the play acting. I think Tielemans had done enough, certainly by the time he got that warning, to earn himself a booking. So we disagree on that, clearly. You're not going to kill my buzz. I enjoyed tonight. I think there were definitely some moments of cynicism. I think that if you showed me or gave me enough time, rather, with the highlights of any of the teams that are in this tournament, I could find you some pretty grievous moments of cynicism. Certainly England, by the way. And so I think this is one of those.
Do you know what, Arthur? Do you know what I think? I do think the last 10 minutes was just an exhibition of that. But I didn't really, I don't know why, but I didn't really notice that until the last 10 minutes. And maybe it's, I get told off for saying recency bias a lot, but like, that is the last 10 minutes we just saw, and it was sort of mesmerizing in many ways.
I think the last 10 minutes were tremendously cynical, and I think that most teams with a 2-1 lead late against the number one ranked team in the world would do something cynical. I think that's absurd to suggest that most teams wouldn't, frankly. I think that most teams aren't in that position against Belgium, but most teams would. I agree with Max. I didn't see it that same degree all through the game, but I also appreciate that I am coming at this with different eyes, and so I would defer if you think that they were all through the game.
Am I the only one who saw Ciro Immobile pole-axed in the Belgian penalty area as Italy scored their first goal, and suddenly making the most miraculous recovery I've ever seen to go and join in the celebrations? I thought he'd snapped his leg. He was writhing in so much agony. I mean, I would understand Simon's outrage if Italy had just beaten England or indeed Watford, but because I would be similarly enraged if it happened in a game against Ireland, but because it happened against a team I don't really care about in any way, I just thought it was highly commendable and hugely amusing.
That for me is not the big takeaway of this game. Like Nicky said, I thought Barella's finish was amazing. Insigne's goal was great. I thought Doku was superb for Belgium. And it's sort of, you know, the game, I thought actually Belgium started the game first 10, 15 better than Italy. And I was like, wow, Italy are going to get absolutely hammered here. And then they sort of got a foothold back in the game.
I totally agree with you about the start. I thought Belgium were brilliant in those opening exchanges. I thought Lukaku, there'd been so much talk in Italy about, oh, we need Chiellini to be back because Chiellini's the one who knows how to handle Lukaku. And I thought Lukaku in that opening bit was getting the better of him. But, you know, I'm really hung up on this idea. And I appreciate with all of these sort of rhetorics, like they get turned on their head very quickly by the narrative. All right. So if Italy lose, then of course the narrative gets told differently. But I do think Mancini has hammered this point so much in all of his press conferences about fun. And he said it actually before this game. What he said was, I'm trying to remember exactly how he phrased it. I've just put it in an article that will be on The Guardian. He said it in his pre-match press conference. He said, you know, having fun at work is what everyone should have, basically. He said everyone should be having a good time at work, which of course the reality is lots of people aren't having fun in their jobs. And I thought that's quite a sort of blissful, naive footballer view of the world, that everyone's at work having a good time. But I really appreciate it, because I think that most people in the world actually do better work when they're having fun. And I think there was so many little moments in this game, including someone who certainly knows how to be cynical. Certainly, I'm sure it was lots of moments in this game, but Chiellini, who clearly was engaging in a bit of shithousery, should we say, with Witzel at some point. The referee sort of stopped before a corner and said, right, you two. And Chiellini just does this big grin and hugs Witzel. I just thought, that's a man having fun. That's a man who is at a Euros quarterfinal having a great time.
Ollie says, is being dubbed a golden generation the worst thing that can happen to an international team? Belgium going much the same way as England in the 2000s. Really disappointing performance to them from them again in a major tournament. Baz?
Look, that's just a label that doesn't really mean anything. I don't think Roberto Martinez is the right man to have in charge of a team that talented. Perhaps I'm being unfair. I watched a documentary about him recently, and while he comes across as an absolute gent, I don't think he's the man to get the best out of those players. Like, towards the end of the game, I think they were still playing with five at the back or three central defenders. And you're going, like, take one of them off, throw on another forward. Lukaku probably could and should have equalised. That Spinazzola block on the line was incredible. But I think he could have done with a bit of assistance up front. And I don't think... There was one stage where I think it was about 10 minutes to go and Martin Keown or someone on TV said, he's being very calm. And I think he was a bit too calm. I don't think he realised the urgency of the situation. But I didn't expect a huge amount from Belgium going into this tournament, and they've performed about as well as I expected them to. I think Kevin De Bruyne probably deserves better. There was a time at times today, and he possibly even wasn't 100% fit, that he was just carrying that team. And the manner in which he was getting so annoyed by the Italian antics was quite funny. But I totally understand his rage. But what can you do?
Yeah, Thomas says, just the last thing, Nicky, I promise, on the shithousery.
Playing Talk Italy away, and being you're not going to bring me down. I've already said it.
I know. Playing Italy and being behind in the 90th minute just feels like the fourth level of hell. Every slight nudge brings cramp, rolls, hand waving, shit. I'm reasonably in awe at how good at it they are. I mean, at most teams, I think you're right. I think most teams should do it. How big a miss, Nicky, has Spinazzola? Because he's had such a brilliant tournament. Obviously, we don't know exactly what's wrong, but it looked really bad.
It looked like a hamstring, didn't it? Or worse. I'm heartbroken for him. He's one of those players who, it's funny, but people have sort of talked about his pace and his suddenness, and he's sort of been saying in interviews, look, I've been doing this for 4 years. It's just that I wasn't that visible before because I was playing at teams like Atalanta and I'm at Roma. People start to notice. And it's true. The thing that has stopped him from having a bigger profile before now, though, might not be the clubs he's played for. It's the fact that he does get injured a lot, and it's what stopped him from having the chance at Juventus. It's why they kept sending him out on loan and eventually let him go. And, you know, you hope it won't be something that goes on forever, but it's hard not to think about that sort of thing, the fact that he has torn his cruciate ligament before, when you see this happen and you just think, oh, not again. This is someone who deserves better.
Can we talk about the penalty, Barry? I don't know why I bother social media, but like, Doku gets pushed by a person and you're not allowed to push a person. That's a foul. And lots of people saying it's a shoulder barge. It might be soft, but it's a foul. Am I an idiot?
No,
there are two separate questions if you want.
You are an idiot, but you're not an idiot for thinking that. It was an absolute stonewall, as they say, penalty. All day long, stonewall. He leaned into the small of his back with his elbow and deliberately shoved him over. I loved the Italian protests. It was the classic, you know, fingers pursed together in the surround the referee. And it went to a VAR check, and quite rightfully, the decision was upheld. It was a penalty. I did notice you'd brought it up on Twitter, and I honestly am baffled by anyone who thinks, upon seeing that on several occasions in slow motion, thinks it wasn't a penalty.
There were two moments that two moments that entertained me for similar reasons. Firstly, towards the end of the game, I think it was Jorginho running down the flank, defensive, in Italy's left back position. And De Bruyne gives him a shove, shoves him right off the pitch. Referee blows his whistle, and De Bruyne's like, what, is that foul? It was almost exactly the same foul as the penalty, perhaps just a little bit more so. And there was also just a couple of minutes after the first goal, when Insigne had been on the floor in the penalty area, I think he goes to challenge with Courtois for a ball that's bouncing the penalty area. Courtois goes down, referee blows his whistle, and he's like, you don't go down for that. Who goes down that easily? I enjoyed those two moments.
Can I ask, sorry, Max, when you're playing, do you appeal for corners and throw-ins that you know you shouldn't get? And do you piss and moan at the referee when he is given a decision against you that you know 100% to be correct?
I think I've said this on the pod before, but there was one moment where I thought the ref had made a very bad decision and I was yelling at him and the ref said, I literally read an article in The Guardian you wrote about the respect campaign last week. And I said, okay, fair enough. And I was really annoyed that Italy were in white, but then some colorblind people, and I think we talked about this before, said actually that's part of, you know, UEFA have a, you know, got in touch with colorblind organizations or organizations that represent colorblind people to say, look, that is the best contrast between two kits. So I will no longer get upset about unnecessary away kits because they may be necessary. Is Belvita the only international biscuit fixture? And I do apologise because I haven't got the name of who sent that, but I enjoyed it. Nick, is there anything else you'd like to add for this game before we go on to Spain?
No.
Beating Switzerland on penalties? Well, then we will proceed and we'll do that in part two. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Now, you've just got about a day to vote for us as the best podcast, the listener's choice at the British Podcast Awards. You go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote. The closing date is Sunday. We're in the top 20, but we don't want to be 15th. We're better than Burnley. Be like this person, Infinite Portals. Hi, Max. I was able to garner 17 votes for the pod. All I had to do was share the American ESPN commentator's soundtrack of Dolberg's wonderful first goal and then point to Barry's astute analysis. Wow. All my colleagues said, yep, Football Weekly gets a vote. Good luck. Everyone was confused as to what stolen watches had to do with the goal. Another instance I used for canvassing was the France-Portugal game. The analyst seemed to have a bromance with Ronaldo as repeatedly glorifying his every touch. But he failed to acknowledge the impressive performance of Renato Sanchez. I was watching the match with a few friends. I pointed to his midfield play and suggested they listen to the pod that evening. You guys got some votes. I got some free drinks for recommending a podcast. Wow. By the way, I'm from Sidhar, from Charlotte, North Carolina in the USA. The pod has been my running companion for over a year now. Usually gets me about 6 to 7 miles. I do have an accident to report when I fell off the treadmill last month, but that's clumsy me. Stay awesome, you guys. Thank you. And stay awesome yourself. Now, Switzerland, Spain. Spain threw on penalties. I quickly caught up with Nick Ames in St. Petersburg at full time. You've done some miles, Nick, haven't you? Are you tired?
I'm fresh as a daisy, Matt.
How sad were you when this game went to extra time?
Well, it had been not the fastest moving 90 minutes, had it? So I was slightly perturbed, but we're here now. We got there.
We got there, yeah. My overriding feeling is sort of sympathy for the Swiss. I don't know if it's just because they're the smaller team or because I thought that red card was slightly harsh, but I feel sorry for them.
I feel sorry for them too, Max. So I share that emotion, and I think it was harsh on them. I think we don't know how tired they would have got as it went down towards 90 minutes and into extra time. But that red card really changed things because Spain were rocking. Okay, they rallied a little bit after the equaliser. I think Azpilicueta overlapped to put a centre across goal, but Spain were rocking, and Switzerland really fancied that. The red card, I've only seen one quick replay, but I think it was harsh. Freuler didn't have his studs up. He got the ball. Maybe the argument, I guess, that they would use is excessive force. I definitely didn't see it that way. And after that, it just becomes a rearguard action, doesn't it? And Spain, I think, I mean, they have a chances to win it in extra time. We all saw that. It was quite heroic from Switzerland to hold out. The goalkeeper, Sommer, again, was superb. Rodriguez made that brilliant block from Marcos Llorente towards the end, which was proper gladiatorial stuff. And Spain, in extra time, did start to go through the gears. But I thought they cruised it for a lot of that game, Spain. I thought they got the early goal, and I think they were a bit overly obsessed with control. Controlling the ball, controlling the game. They had between two-thirds and three-quarters of possession, I think. But it was almost at the expense of doing anything dynamic whatsoever. And there were just a few little signs from the Switzerland side who hadn't threatened that much. There was a few little signs before the equaliser that Spain might be punished for, you know, just easing off a bit. And they were, with a, you know, comical defensive mistake that I think we've seen. I think it was Laporte into Torres, wasn't it? And then the ball bouncing loose and then Freuler in his last action of the game, sending it to Shaqiri. And I just think the red card after that tilted things. We don't know what would have happened in that last 10 minutes or so. But a fantastic effort from Switzerland. And it was, you know, quite something in the gatherings before extra time and penalties to see Granit Xhaka in there. You know, before the pens, he was like bouncing on the balls of his feet. You could tell he just wanted to be out there. He was like a hyperactive toddler. He was down there G-ing everyone up. It was quite a scene. And yeah, gutted for them.
Do you think Spain are good?
Do I think they are good or look good?
Are good. It's a footballing question. I'll get onto aesthetics with Barry later, I imagine.
Are Spain a good football team? I think they've shown more in some other games than they have today. Like I was saying upstairs to your friend of mine, Sid Lowe, that in a way it was a little bit like their game with Poland today. You know, decent first half, decent-ish first half, and not so good second half. Although I think against Poland, they did create more chances before Lewandowski punished them. I think they are not going to win this tournament. I think they're a little bit brittle in many areas of the pitch. I don't think today they move the ball quickly enough at all, although the surface didn't help, actually. But the teams didn't train on this pitch before the game because it's had six matches already in this tournament and it cut up and it was slow and bobbly today. It wasn't good for flowing football. But I just think Spain don't have that much of a cutting edge. I think, you know, they do have a bit of a defensive lapse in them, as we saw today, and against Croatia too, and against Poland. I cannot see them winning this competition on this evidence. That's a long-winded answer of saying I don't know if they're any good.
Where are you, Nick? You look like you're in like a dressing room of a Sunday league football team.
I am in quite a Spartan corridor in the in the cliche would be in the bowels of a Kostovsky Stadium here.
All right.
It's very spacious and there's not too many people coming near me for some reason.
And where next for you?
Home, Max. It's
coming home. Nick's coming home.
It is absolutely coming home. I'm not sure I even know which country I'm in currently, but yeah, I'm pending the outcome or the timely receipt of a COVID-19 test for which I queued for 2 hours this morning. I will be on my way home at 17:20 local time tomorrow if anyone wants to come and see me off.
Marvellous. Or wave you, you know, as you land the open top bus at Stansted Airport or wherever you happen to be landing. Have a wonderful trip. Safe trip, Nick. And we'll chat to you soon. Cheers, mate.
Thank you, Max. Speak soon. Cheers.
Nick Ames there out in St. Petersburg. Doug says, how frustrated will Max be when Spain or Switzerland aren't tired after three straight games with extra time and beat England in the final? The penalty shootout, Simon, I mean, it was a terrible penalty shootout, wasn't it? It was hilariously bad.
There were two Swiss players who took exactly the same completely failed approach to their penalties, which was to run very slowly towards the ball, wait for the goalkeeper to commit himself, and then when he fails to commit himself, roll the ball slowly in a direction which is convenient for the goalkeeper. That's not the way to do it. It was a sad end to the match. I'll tell you what annoyed me immediately before.
Here we go. Yeah,
I've got a few of these. I was annoyed quite a bit in this game too. But before the penalty shootout, they toss a plastic disc to see who's going to take the first penalty. And the overhead camera was over the coin toss as it happened. It was that the plastic disc barely did one turn.
Oh, that's not on.
If someone tossed that coin for me before a sporting event, I'd tell them to have another go and give it a bit of air. So anyway, Spain made the call for the coin toss. And it was, I mean, this was a game where Spain had every possible advantage. They were playing Switzerland. Switzerland missing their captain, who was suspended, whose striker was injured early on. and who had a player ludicrously sent off. And for 20 minutes of normal time, all of extra time, they played with an extra man. In extra time, they dominated. They couldn't make it count. All their advantages in terms of, you know, the nation's sporting history, the individuals in their squad, the key players missing from the Swiss team from the start, and more later on, playing against 10 men. And then the stupid coin toss. they had them all. And by the end, I just thought, it's time to take defeat. You know, you've had your chance. You've had every possible advantage. You haven't made it count. This is when you lose and you go home and face the music. And it is going to be some discordant, nasty music when you get to face it. but not to be this time.
Alpaca, just on the penalties, Alpaca Freeway says, should Steve Bruce be sacked for Fabian Scher's missed penalty? The other thing I noticed was, every time they went to do the walk, the ball was miles away. Like they had to walk. The walk's hard enough. They got to walk to like the touchline to pick it up. I guess because everyone had missed and the keeper had sort of pushed it out. But I thought that was slightly unfair. I mean, this did Barry Field to me. The narrative was Switzerland will win this because they've been heroic and Spain have been pretty flat.
Yeah, I got a text from our friend Barca Jim at the end of that game. Parental advisory, needless to say. Thank fuck for that. Don't want any diddy teams left in this. I only want teams that can pump them. I'm not sure who he's referring to there. Scottish Jim. I thought Switzerland would win the shootout. I did the minute-by-minute for this game, and you can generally tell if a game's good or not by, you know, are you watching the clock? Are you bored? Are you struggling to think of things to write about? And I was watching the clock and I was bored and I was struggling to think of things to write about after about 70 minutes or so. And then when that Swiss chap, Frühler, got sent off, it really picked up because Spain desperately didn't want the game to go to extra time and were throwing the kitchen sink at Switzerland. Then they desperately didn't want the game to go to penalties because they'd missed their previous five penalties in various games and went on to miss a sixth in the shootout when Sergio Busquets rolled his against the post, having sent the keeper the wrong way. And they were throwing the kitchen sink and every other bit of kitchen furniture you can think of at Switzerland, whose defending was absolutely magnificent. Spain are such a good team, but and even though they've scored 11 goals in their past three games, 10 in sort of the two before tonight, they're one centre forward away from being absolutely the best team in the tournament, I think. And
did you call Freuler Frudel? Is that like a flump?
Did I call him Frudel?
Sounded like you called him Frudel, like a hobbit or a flump. Anyway, Frudel or Freuler, that was a harsh red card. I mean, as much as I thought the penalty was stonewall for Belgium, Nicky, I thought this red, I understand why it was given, but it felt really harsh to me.
Well, I hope everyone saw Rob Holding's, I think it was Instagram post with the perfectly placed games gone at the bottom the post about it. But yeah, it was a very tough red. Funnily enough, Freuler got sent off in the Champions League this season in a critical game for Atalanta against Real Madrid, and that was an even more scandalous red card, in my opinion. So Freuler's had a bit of a rough time with unfair red cards in big moments.
Apparently on American television, Mark Clattenburg was the referee in residence, and he said it was a very harsh red card. But I was quite surprised on ITV, where the panel was comprised of Roy Keane, Graeme Souness and Nigel de Jong, all of whom like a meaty tackle are used to in their day, they all thought it was completely justified. And that really knocked me for six, because I thought it was a very harsh card.
I've just got two further refereeing gripes about this game.
Oh, excellent.
Sorry. Firstly, about 10 minutes after the red card, it was Michael Oliver was the referee, and he waved play on after a player went down easily on the wing. And the commentators on ITV praised him for his determination to let the game to flow and not influence the game. And I was like, literally 10 minutes ago, he voluntarily and unnecessarily destroyed the game. He ruined the game. So enough of that nonsense. Secondly, Gavranovic.
Oh, that yellow card, because he was going to miss
that yellow card. Yeah. He would have missed the semi-final. They would have taken away. I'm complaining about something that isn't happening, which is...
No, I'm with you. I still feel bad for him.
He would have missed the semi-final. He would have missed the highlight of his career for some cruddy little 121st minute yellow card. And where is the... Not just the justice, but the respect for him as a human and as an athlete, of someone who has dedicated his life so far to the sport, and the sport would have taken away his best moment, his defining, you know, the pinnacle of his career for nothing, for a fig, for a frippery. And credit to him, infinite credit for to him, for then taking the first penalty. And that was one of the good penalties of the shootout. Tuck that away. I remember, you know, Gazza falling apart in 1990 and being unable to take a penalty in that shootout in the knowledge that he wasn't going to be able to play in the final. But, yeah, credit to Gavranovic for keeping going.
I have a stat that I stole from Jamie Cuttridge on Twitter. I don't know where it came from, so I'm hoping it's right. But if he's correct, then this is the 10th time in a World Cup or Euros that a team has gone to two shootouts, and only twice has that team managed to win both of them, which I just thought was interesting, because actually we sort of build up these narratives around teams that win shootouts. For instance, Germany always winning shootouts. And actually the fact is that what evidence there is, which isn't a lot, but is that generally if you're forced to go to two shootouts, you won't win them both. So probably a lot of it is in the end just chance.
We should mention, you know, Switzerland, this was in a French newspaper or possibly a Swiss newspaper. It's in French. No, it's not. It's in Spanish. las diferencias de los viajes de las dos selecciones. So that is Spanish. Switzerland travelled 13,326.94 kilometres during the Euros, and Spain travelled 4,830.84. I mean, you still got to get on and off a plane, right? But that does seem, and they played all their games in Seville, was a rubbish pitch, but that does seem, it seems ludicrous, Barry, and it seems like, you know, UEFA need to look at this and not do a Euros again that is the entirety of Europe.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a bonkers idea even before the pandemic, and seems even more bonkers since the pandemic. But as I recall, the reason was that no one country could afford to hold it on their own. But this is what we've been left with. And yeah, some teams have been treated grossly unfairly in terms of travel, Wales or another. But yeah, it is unfair.
It is unfair. Barry has spoken. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll look ahead to Saturday's games. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Samuel says, who does Baz hate more? Newcastle fans who think we should aim higher than a yearly relegation battle with Steve Bruce, or England fans who think hashtag it's coming home?
I don't hate either. Hate's a very strong word. I think there's about two people on the planet I absolutely despise, and Newcastle and England fans would be flattering themselves if they thought they were among them.
If we win the Listener's Award for Best British Podcast, if you all vote for it, Barry will announce who those two people are at a live show.
I'll be like Father Ted at the Golden Clerics Award. And now anyway. The liars!
Anyway, Ukraine-England, Simon, what are you thinking?
Interesting that Shevchenko said that they've already achieved their goal. You know, they've done what they wanted to do. From now, it's just have fun, enjoy it, go out on a high. And that approach to the game will be a total contrast to England, who see opportunity opening up in front of them in a way it rarely has. And I imagine we'll go in a bit terrified of the possibility of not grasping this potential. I'll be really interested to see how that approach pans out, that diversity of approach pans out in the game itself. Obviously, you would expect England to be the stronger team, but the way they've been playing quite conservatively kind of mitigates against them rolling over opposition. So while it also has led to us have not conceded a goal so far and being very strong defensively, and that must be discouraging to potential opponents, I think that Ukraine will be in this game, for the majority of it. And it'll be interesting to see if they are genuinely fearless and how much of a leveller that lack of weight upon them is.
I have been pretty high on two teams before this tournament, which was Italy and England. I even have a betting slip to prove it, so I'm not making this up. But I think that the greatest thing that worries me for England right now is exactly the reaction to that win over Germany. They were good against Germany. It was an impressive win and a really important win, I think, when you've got that monkey on your back. But the studio reaction to that win was, oh, it's a clean path now to winning the whole thing, isn't it? We've beaten Germany, it's over. And I think that's fine if it's just an external noise. That's fine if it's just people in studios watching England and saying that. It's not fine if people in the England camp have started to think that, because yes, England are far better than Ukraine. They are player for player, if you want to do it that way, and they are on their performances at this tournament. Ukraine have had a couple of good performances and a couple of quite poor. Well, actually, that's not fair. The Netherlands lost, they played well. The Austria game, they were awful. But they aren't a team at England's level of potential, and England should beat them. The attitude is hugely important. But frankly, I do think that Southgate is a manager who probably has done quite a good job of keeping their feet on the ground.
I do think that he does keep the noise out. I always wonder how much noise gets in. You know, they're footballers playing football. That, I mean, I know they are on social media. That might make a difference. But I do think he's good at that. But I agree with you. I didn't think they were brilliant against Germany. You know, they did the job. But, you know, that game was on a game of fine margins. And it was great that we won. And we should celebrate that without just going, we're the best team in the world. It'll be interesting to see how he sets up.
I think that is what Luka Modric was talking about when he said England have this arrogance about them. It was that. And actually, I think often it isn't the players. Often it is people outside of the team who do that. But that is what he meant, I think, is that reaction. A team that is a really good team, full of good players, and should have high expectations of itself. But still, England haven't won a tournament since 1966. To go from we've beaten Germany in the last 16 to we've won the tournament, is there's steps along the way, you know. There's things still to do.
Czech Republic, Denmark, Barry, what do you reckon?
I think Denmark will win. I kind of hope they win. I think England will beat Ukraine, and I think a Denmark-England semi-final would be a very fascinating contest. A lot of people seem to think England's name might be on the cup. I have a feeling Denmark's might be on it, you know, just after the trauma they endured in their opening game. And they're a pretty impressive outfit, we shall see. But I was asked to go to do an interview on a RTE radio show in Ireland this morning, and the subject up for debate was, should the people of Ireland support England in this tournament because they're such nice guys? And while I totally agree that they are an incredibly likeable bunch of blokes, and their manager is an incredibly likeable guy, I just don't have it in me to win them well. But I think they will see off Ukraine with a minimum fuss. But there's always the possibility. They do tend to find new and interesting ways of tripping over their own feet.
It was interesting. I just answered
a question you didn't ask.
No, that's me. I don't mind. I was walking down Wembley Way after the Germany game, and I saw two guys in Germany shirts. So I went up to console them, and you know, I want to be overly nice as an England fan. And actually, the atmosphere, as I said before, was really good. And I was like, bad luck, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And they just turned to me and went, oh, that's not a problem. We just flew over for the crack, you know, literally. It's just two really nice Irish blokes who just had tickets in Dublin. We're like, oh, well, we'll go because of the games at Wembley. And they were like German shirt, flag, face paint, everything. Absolutely. And fair play to them. Sam says, I'm a big Spurs fan. I cycle to work. And at work, the showers are numbered. I always shower in number 10 because that's Harry Kane's number for Spurs. But when the Euros started, I needed to change to number 9, his England number. However, since the Euros have begun, the number 9 shower has been out of order. And I'm convinced this is causing him to not look like his usual self in an England shirt. On the eve of a quarterfinal, I'm praying that when I get into work this morning, that number 9 has been fixed and Harry looks his usual self again. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Sam. Well, look, we all
could
do.
He not just like have a shower in number 5 and then tip next door to number 4 just to another cooling shower and
lather up in 5, rinse in 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
The Zamorano.
Yes, the Zamorano shower technique, Simon. You're absolutely right. And just finally, CM got in touch on the most important subject of the X-Files. About Robert Patrick taking over from David Duchovny, which I just did, that had never registered with me. Robert Patrick was solid as the Mulder replacement in late X-Files, but sadly the writing was awful by then. It was a total write-off when Gillian Anderson left, similar to when Villa sold Delph and Benteke in 2015-2016. Which England player would you back to solve an X-File and why? I mean, I could have given you some notice for this question.
So was the Robert Patrick, David Duchovny, was that like a Pippa from Home and Away?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Who was the one in Neighbours who was just different for like 3 weeks?
Lucy. And then,
no, there were three Lucys. Robinson. That was different. No, there were three Lucys.
Oh, Cheryl.
Was it Cheryl?
They just changed the actress.
But just for a bit.
Yeah, and they didn't explain it, and then she changed back. I think it was Cheryl.
It's tremendous. Anyway, I think that's enough for today, isn't it? Simon, I hope you cheer up.
I'm extremely cheerful. I'm enjoying the Euros, and you've just caught me on an unusually opinionated day.
No,
normally
I enjoyed it.
I have many fewer opinions. I've got a fraction of these opinions on an average.
No, I believe opinions are arguably important in this kind of football analysis. I did like, Barry, your line saying, you know, with the minute by minute, you were struggling for things to write and got bored. But at least you managed to say you were struggling with things to write. So you got some content out of struggling with things to write by saying, I'm struggling to think of things to write, which was perfectly adequate description of that game.
Okay, thank you.
That's a pleasure. And Nikki, thank you so much.
Thanks.
We will be back tomorrow after the England-Ukraine game. And well done to me for not mentioning I had my second jab at 9 o'clock this morning. I feel absolutely shite. We'll be back. We're back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.